All right, everybody, you are in the huddle, recorded here in Lenoxville on CGMQ 88.9. I'm joined by fellow analysts here, Stone Sousa. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm good. I'm really excited about this show. Since last show, it's been crazy in sports. We had Jimmy Garoppolo, Josh Gordon, Darrell Revis making their NFL debuts. Geno Smith starting over Eli Manning. We're going to talk about that also. Eagles lost their second Sunday night against Seattle. And if you're a Patriots hater, you had a good weekend because Gronk was suspended. I won't defend him. It was well deserved. Brady snapped on the sideline, got into it with his offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels. But please don't compare this to Odell or Antonio Brown snapping on the sideline. It's different. Tom Brady proved himself. And Josh McDaniels told him, quote, he was wide open, end quote. Tom Brady doesn't need to be told that. If he missed, he knows he missed. If he's mad, they settled for a field goal. If he's mad, it's because that offense didn't reach their full potential. So he's not being selfish. He's not a receiver saying that he should get the ball more. He just wants perfection. Other than that, Giants, clean slate. They fired Ben McAdoo, fired their GM, and we're expecting a new quarterback next year, so they're going to start fresh. And the Packers. I know it's early, but I think Stone, you agree with me with this one. Aaron Rodgers is back in 2 weeks.
That's dangerous.
Next week, they have the Cleveland Browns.
They've been looking good with those running backs, that committee of running backs they have.
Yeah.
The three they drafted, Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones, and even Mays is going to get some touches too. I think that those were great picks for them. And Aaron Rodgers coming back is huge because Brent Hundley has been getting the job done, but he's obviously not Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers, as you can see from like a Cowboys game last year, that was his show. He carries teams to Super Bowls.
And listen to this. If they win next week at Cleveland, after that, the Green Bay Packers schedule is Carolina at Carolina, Minnesota Sunday night in, no, Saturday night, sorry, in Lambeau Field, and then Detroit. So Aaron Rodgers is coming back, and if you think he's not going to come back and dice those teams, I don't know. Aaron Rodgers is my dark horse. I think he's going to make a comeback, and he's going to be an impact later on in the playoffs.
Just alert for fantasy owners. If you haven't picked him up in your leagues, get on that. That could be a game changer.
Big time, big time. In other news, LeVar Ball pulls out LiAngelo from UCLA.
That's a circus act.
Like. Yeah, I'm kind of sick of talking about LeVar Ball. He's just going nuts. It's
big baller bust at this point.
Big baller bust. I like that. And Monday night, early in the game Monday, we saw a hit. Ryan Shazier went for a hit. It was a clean hit and stayed down. It looked scary. It was a back injury. But now we know he's good. He has feeling in his lower limbs. So hopefully the recovery will go well. And as soon as I saw that, the Steelers are an emotionally driven team. Yeah. As soon as I saw that, I called it. I looked at my roommate and I said, they're going to get fired up. And if you think Steelers are out of this game, even at the half, I thought Steelers were still going to win. And we must have seen one of the most physical games of football.
That's AFC North football, just like Big Ben said.
Exactly.
If guys don't like that, you have not watched AFC North football before. Because Steelers-Bengals is that type of game.
That was some old school, hard-hitting football. I loved it. I love that type of football. And last thing in the news, we just got this in a couple minutes ago. Roger Goodell, 5-year contract extension for $200 million.
That's NBA money.
NBA money for the big boss. How do you feel about that?
Man, $200 million? I'm in the wrong profession. Yeah, I need to be a commissioner.
So we have a great show for you guys today. We're talking NFL debuts, like I mentioned earlier. Mike and Stone are going to talk about college footballs who should sit out bowl games or not. It's going to be interesting. And we're also talking NBA surprises and disappointments. We're going to go over our 5 picks for the week. And we have Nate with the final break. So tune in. It's going to be a real interesting one. But before we start, the college football playoffs are officially out. So we have Clemson against Alabama, Oklahoma and Georgia. Should Ohio be in?
The committee absolutely got it right when they chose Alabama. Alabama was the best team this season. You know, maybe they lost to Auburn at the end of the year, but still ranked number one or number two throughout the entire year. Playing with a target on your back, it's tough to do, especially year in, year out. Everybody knows it's Bama or bust for the national title. So I think the committee absolutely got it right. It's not about ratings. It's not about, you know, who should be. It's not about what conference should be in or who's the best coach. It's about what are the best teams, not the most deserving teams. And the committee absolutely got it right. We'll take it to Vegas for stats for a second. Vegas favors Alabama by 5.5 points over Ohio State on neutral field. And if you want to talk about the best teams on neutral field, isn't that what the committee is supposed to do? We'll look at some of the stats comparing Alabama and Ohio State. First, Alabama has the same number of wins against teams with winning records as Ohio State, and they have better losses. A loss against a number two Auburn team is better than a 31-point blowout against an unranked Iowa team. And we all know, Alabama, if they played Iowa, it wouldn't be a contest. Alabama has the same number of top 25 wins as Ohio State with 3. Alabama went 7-1 against bowl teams. Ohio State went 5-2. Alabama went 5-1 against FBS teams in Power 5 conferences with 500 or better records. Ohio State went 4-2. Alabama went 3-1 against FBS teams in Power 5 conferences with just winning records. Ohio State went 4-2. And Alabama played most of their season without their 4 starting linebackers. What team do you know loses their 4 starting linebackers and still keeps the train rolling? Only Nick Saban can do that. That's testament to his recruiting. Last 10 years, ranked 1 or 2 in recruiting rankings. And the depth that they have and the development program that they have. If Alabama were to play, they're projected to win. And they're favored to win. If you want to talk about, you know what, maybe throw out the stats, throw out all the metrics, that's fine. Okay, we'll do that. Remember when Penn State last year won the Big Ten and beat Ohio State? They didn't get in. And you guys in Ohio State was complaining, oh yeah, you know what, we're better, we'll beat them again, we have better wins. Okay, the committee believed you and they put you in. Then you guys got blown out 31-0. Now this year, you want to take Penn State's side. You want to be like, you know what, we won the Big Ten, we beat a bunch of good teams. Okay, that's nice. And now Alabama comes up here with your argument from last year, and they're getting in. Now you guys want to jump on them and say, you know what, we should have got in, we won our conference title. That's nice. Conference titles don't mean everything. I don't put qualifiers on best teams. If you want to look at the NFL, does the best team necessarily win the Super Bowl? No. In college football, the best 4 teams deserve to play for the title. I don't care what metric, what stat, what team, what tape. College football deserves the best. If you want to look at the SEC versus the Big Ten, Vegas favors the SEC in 10 out of the 14 matchups. And the Big Ten, for all you Midwestern fans, the Big Ten the last 2 years has scored 0 points in the college football playoff. Let me repeat that again. 0. A goose egg. 38-0 against Michigan State and 31-0 against Clemson. So don't come in here and tell me the Big Ten is this and that. You guys are the fraud conference of college football. You guys absolutely suck against good competition. Okay, I get it. Ohio State beat Alabama in 2015. What have you done since? Absolutely nothing. Ohio State runs that conference. Remember they blew out Wisconsin 59-0 in your conference title game? What a disgrace. And Wisconsin, don't get me started. You guys are garbage. Losing the best offense you've played this year is FAU. And yeah, their coach came from Alabama. Of course you couldn't stop their offense. You couldn't stop Ohio State in the championship game. Get it? Give me a break. Now, when it comes to the SEC, the best conference in football, in my opinion. Obviously, I'm an Alabama fan. I love Southern football. Maybe I'm a little biased. But still, you know football when you see it. Zach, you know SEC football. Southern football is the best.
It's on top, for sure, yeah. Obviously.
And now I know that a lot of people here are going to be like, you know what, maybe they should change the college football committee. Maybe they should reword the language. Okay, that's fine. Just remember, conferences aren't equal. Not every conference plays the same amount of same schedule. ACC and SEC plays less conference games than the Pac-12, Big 12, and Big 10. And don't tell me about the conference championship game. Oh, yeah, you know what? We won this, we won that. Okay. Take the Big 10 East versus Big 10 West. You know who the Big 10 East has? Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State. The 4 best teams in the Big 10. And only one of them can go to the title game. You know who's in the Big 10 West? Frauds like Iowa, Wisconsin, and Nebraska. Remember when Iowa went undefeated in 2015? And you're like, oh, we should get in. We should, you know, although we lost Michigan State, we still deserve a chance. Then you guys played Stanford and got exposed. You guys got run off the field. Shouldn't have even been there. The SEC, LSU, Mississippi State, Auburn, Alabama would all win the Big Ten right now. Obviously, maybe some of those games would be a lot closer, but still, 4 teams out of an entire conference would run the other conference. It's crazy to think that Ohio State and Alabama are a discussion. You watch the film, you watch the games, Alabama's a better team. And the committee said, we don't like bad losses. Alabama would not get blown up by Iowa. Alabama would run Wisconsin off the field. The worst loss the committee has allowed is Ohio State and Virginia Tech. And Virginia Tech beat Ohio State by 14 in 2014. That's the year Ohio State won. They're not putting in Penn State from last year who got blown up by 39 to Michigan, or Ohio State this year got blown up by 31 to Iowa. They don't want that. They want to see you their whole body of work from start to finish, how good you performed, how consistent you were. I think that's what the fans deserve. People want to see the best teams play in January, and the team that can hold the trophy and call themselves national titles are the best team in college football. It's not about the most deserving. It's not about what this and that, this debate. We're not having a debate. You watch the film, you know football. The best teams deserve to get in.
So you're saying a loss can hurt you, but a
bad loss will kill your chances. Like if Alabama, if they got blown out by Auburn, we're not having this discussion. But it's a rivalry game, they were competitive, and it was very good. Like if Alabama played Ohio State's schedule, oh, come on, give me a break. Alabama would slap Illinois, Nebraska, Michigan State, Michigan this year because they're not good. You want to bring up Rutgers, Maryland? I can go on. That schedule is horrendous. That looks like the Eagles' schedules in the past 5 weeks.
Ooh.
And you want to look at, you know what, Florida State's not, you know, a top team like they were last year. Well, it's not Alabama's fault. Their quarterback was still playing in the fourth quarter. He got hurt. Obviously, he's a great quarterback. Florida State's season came off the rails after that. But starting a freshman quarterback, as you know, Zach, is a little harder for a receiver.
Yeah, for sure. You got to build that chemistry.
Yeah, for sure. And if the committee's going to give a pass to Clemson for that Kelly Bryant injury with their loss to Syracuse, they damn well better give a pass to Alabama for that win against Florida State.
This is 88.9 CJMQ FM. Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada.
Welcome back to the huddle, ladies and gentlemen. I'm with Ryan here at the table. Lots of interesting debuts in the NFL this weekend, right?
Yeah, there was actually four pretty interesting players who got opportunities this past weekend. And we'll start off by talking about Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon is finally back. It took the kid some time, but for the first time in 3 years, he was back on a football field on game day with the Cleveland Browns. This kid's spectacular, man. If I had to be out of football for 3 years, I would not have been able to do what Josh Gordon did. He came out, he's playing against a very, very good corner in Casey Hayward, who's having a career year, and ended up finishing with four catches on 85 yards. And that's a very, very respectable performance for somebody who's been out of the game for so long. You can really tell that Cleveland was missing him and are really trying to get him involved in the offense early because he was targeted 11 times throughout the game, which is a pretty high number of targets. When I was watching the game, I really noticed some good things, though. He looked very explosive. He looked almost as if he'd never been gone. He was faster than I've ever seen him. He was stronger than I've ever seen him, and he was just making some really great catches. I don't know if you watched the game, Zach, but there was one play. There was actually two plays that really stood out to me. There was one where he caught a slant across the middle, and there must have been three DBs around him, and he just made a very tough, very, very tough catch in traffic. But the one that stood out to me the most was he was playing one-on-one on the outside against Casey Hayward, and he had a fade route. Casey was playing press, and he beat him clean off the line, and unfortunately, he didn't get a good enough throw, but because the fact that was the ball was underthrown, he adjusted very well, came back to the ball, high-pointed it, and made a great play at a crucial time in the game. Unfortunately for Cleveland, as usual, what's new, they lost the game, but with Josh Gordon back, they were in this game. They had a chance to really win that game.
So finally showing signs of life on the Cleveland offense.
Definitely some things to look forward
Cleveland
to there.
Cleveland team, actually.
Yeah.
Another debut, well, a comeback almost. We had Darrelle Revis playing against his old team, the New York Jets. I think we didn't expect much from Darrelle Revis coming in here. We all know what his role is going to be. His role is going to be to bring this veteran presence to a struggling DB squad in Kansas.
Yes, sir.
It's not the same Darrelle Revis, obviously. He's there more for his wisdom than his athletic abilities. He ended up with 4.5 tackles, a humble game, but
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
He didn't have very much effect in that game, but one thing that I did find interesting about what Kansas City decided to do is the fact that he was playing against his old team, they named Darrelle Revis a captain for that game, which I thought that was just a funny message that they were sending to the Jets.
Yeah, it's lots of respect for Darrelle.
For sure. Let's talk a little bit about Geno Smith.
Geno Smith. Lots of talk about Eli, Giants, and Geno.
So let me just start off by saying I don't believe Eli Manning deserved to be benched whatsoever.
Thank you.
There's absolutely no reason to treat a future Hall of Fame quarterback like that, a quarterback who has won your organization two Super Bowls against arguably the best quarterback ever. There was no reason to do that. Now, personally, I have never been a Geno Smith fan since he was in college. I didn't think he was a very good quarterback. But with that being said, Geno did impress me this weekend. He did better than I thought he would do. He had an opportunity to go out there, start a game, show himself off, and he had a decent stat line. He ended up finishing the game 21 for 34, 212 yards, and a touchdown. Now, they're not flashy numbers, but they're not bad numbers. Basically, what Geno Smith did, he got out there. He was mostly just making throws 3 to 7 yards downfield. He was managing the game, and he didn't turn over the ball, which gave them a chance to win. They ended up losing 24-17, unfortunately, for Geno. But I think the organization messed up. I think if you start Eli Manning that game, the Giants come out with a win. Which is funny because the day after the game, the owner of the team ended up firing the GM and firing the coach. And now, I don't know if you saw, but they officially named Eli Manning as the starting quarterback again next week.
Yeah, so ended the streak for 1 week.
A waste of a streak, exactly.
At the end of the day, I think Brett Favre is close to 300, like 298 or something. So if we're honest, Eli might have never broken that record, but a waste of...
Yeah, it's just a tough way to see the streak go.
Yeah, and like we said, McAdoo's finally out, but I think that decision was made a long time ago. You don't wake up and realize that you have to fire that coach.
Oh, yeah.
But I think just benching Eli was the last straw, especially the way they did it.
If I'm the owner, I'm not letting it get to that point. Mm-hmm. If I saw that my coach was deciding to bench Eli Manning that week, I would have, as an owner, taken the initiative to get rid of McAdoo at that point if you already knew you were going to get rid of him and not put Eli Manning in that situation. But hey, that's just me.
But even if you wanted to bench Eli Manning, I think there was a better way to do it. I have this quote from Doug Gottlieb on Fox Sports 1, and I found it interesting. He said, quote, "Call in Eli and say, Eli, we have to get Davis Webb in. How do you think we should do it? Make it seem like he's coming up with the idea." Because, first of all, let's make this clear, Davis Webb should have been on the field, not Geno Smith, if you're thinking about the future.
Exactly.
So that way, Eli kind of says, oh, well, I don't want to have the start just to have the start. You should bring him in or whatever. It just passes a lot better with the Manning family, which is a big influence in the NFL. And you just look smarter as an organization. You don't go through all that criticism and the outside noise that happened. And
you know what? I'm not going to say it would have saved his job, but had he handled that situation a little bit better, maybe Ben McAdoo would still be coaching the Giants football team this week.
At least would have finished
at least one more week. Exactly. Yeah.
So, other NFL debuts, Jimmy G.
The moment we've all been waiting for.
We've been waiting for this, and it was pretty much exactly what you would expect a young quarterback, high draft pick, to do if he's been learning behind Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
And before we talk about his first start, his first appearance was made against Seattle. He came in 2 for 2, 18 yards, and a touchdown.
Yep.
So right there, good first impression. And then he leads his team to a fourth quarter comeback against, I know it's the Bears, but still, it's the 49ers we're talking about, and gets his first win as a starter for the 49ers. He was smart with the ball, 71.8% completion. That's 17% higher than their previous starter. He can elevate this team. I think the 49ers can build something around him, and the hardest part is done. You found your quarterback.
Exactly.
So as soon as that's done, you build off of that, get an O-line, get a running game, and then the passage is going to come together. And Jimmy G, I have high hopes for Jimmy G. I think he's going to do real well.
You and me both. I mean, like you said, I think the San Francisco 49ers have finally found the quarterback of the future for their franchise. And Jimmy Garoppolo he had a good game. He didn't throw a touchdown pass, but if you watch the game, it was nice to see the San Francisco offense moving the ball for a change. They just looked like they had a lot more confidence with Jimmy G under center, and I think he's going to bring a lot of good things for this organization in the future.
This is CJMQ 88.9 FM.
Here we go. I got Mike and Stone here, and we're talking college football players, the top prospects, who are considering sitting out bowl games. So are we against for that? Stone, Mike?
I'm fully for players sitting out bowl games. What does a top prospect have to gain from playing in the Sun Bowl? They have everything to lose. Remember when Jalen Smith played in the Fiesta Bowl and tore his knee? He was projected to go number 5 overall. And a number 5 overall pick in that year was guaranteed to make $24 million. You know how much money he made in the second round? $6.5 million. That's an $18 million difference, Mike. $18 million. You're never going to see that money again. Never. I don't care what contract he gets next. $18 million, that's money he wishes he could have back. And I know if he did it again, he would not play.
All right, so this is where I'm going with this. All right, Jalen Smith, like, I had a feeling you'd talk about Jalen Smith. Jalen Smith still has 71 tackles this year. Jalen Smith is still a baller. All these guys that get themselves to this position, it's because they have work ethic and drive that makes them actually applicable to make money. Yes, it hurt him that he lost money in the draft, but he is a baller. He's going to re-sign. He's going to remake that money like it's nothing. Now, let's go the other direction, because there was two players that did get injured this year, and it was last year, but it was unfortunate. You know, guys.
No one wishes injuries upon anybody.
But what about guys like Solomon Thomas? What about guys that were supposed to be they were supposed to be high picks, but they end up playing in that game and their stock goes up? What about guys like Myles Garrett that played in the Nothing Bowl, realistically? But he was still out there on the field and still balling for his team.
Okay, so what about Jake Budd in the Orange Bowl? Tears ACL, supposed to go in the second round, goes in the fifth round.
Okay, that's fair. The tight end, right?
Yeah.
And he'll be back.
No, he's not. He's been out for 2 years.
I know, he's on IR right now. I get that. I understand that. It's a year, isn't it? But it doesn't matter. Either way, the fact is...
I hope he comes back, though, just saying.
Of course. Knock on wood. Yeah. Like, no one wants to see anyone injured. I think the point that we're trying to make here is that, at the end of the day, it's important to play in these bowl games for your team. We have guys that, like, I'm not going to take away from Leonard Fournette's situation. Leonard Fournette only played 7 games that year.
He was hurt, yeah.
He was already hurt. He already dealt with a high ankle sprain, which he's actually dealing with now in the NFL, too. So, like, I can kind of see that direction. If you're injured, yes, it's a difficult decision to make. But at the same time, it's like, these guys are on the field, running backs especially. Like, there's even coaches that said, the Penn State coach says it, Jane Franklin says it. He's like, at the end of the day, they don't get to where they are by themselves.
No, they need a whole line, need a quarterback, they need a system.
Exactly. So if you're going to sit out that game, it's not like you're basically saying, I'm better than the O-line that blocked for me all season. I'm better than the quarterback that threw to me all season. I'm better than the coaches that were coaching me all season. You know what? I'm going to go make my money, but you guys can go out there and die for each other. But me, I'm better than that.
Okay, let's do all that. Let me take Christian McCaffrey, for example. Okay. A fully healthy guy. You know, he decided to sit out his game, mm-hmm. which was the Sun Bowl. Mm-hmm. And his players and his coach even came out and said, you know what, I'm fully for you sitting out this bowl game because you've done so much for Stanford and so much for this team that will allow you to sit out the bowl game and go to the NFL.
Okay.
Let me put it to you this way. There's a double standard in college football right now. Mm-hmm. People want to get on their high horse and, you know, say players shouldn't sit out bowl games. What about the coaches when they leave before the bowl game? Mm-hmm. Like Jimbo Fisher made $75 million. Mm-hmm. He didn't finish the regular season. Mm-hmm. He hopped on a plane at midnight and went to Texas A&M.
Okay, but still, I have a question for you. When you're on the football field and you play football, on the football field, do you play for your coach or do you play for the guys beside you? Because at the end of the day, when guys are getting concussed on the field and guys are helping each other up on the field, it's not the coach that's running onto the field helping them up. The coach is just saying, next man in. It's the players that are playing for each other. I understand. And I don't agree with the coaches leaving halfway through. None of that. I don't agree with that. I'm on your side with that. But really, when it comes down to it, we're talking about the players. We're talking about guys that grind in and out every single day in the gym for each other. We're talking about that. We're talking about love. We're talking about passion. We're talking about just being in the game. Some of these guys, it's the last game they'll ever play. They're not going to be able to play another football game again.
You see, Mike, that's where I have a problem.
Okay.
Fans and, you know, a lot of these athletes look at these players sitting out, and they hope that it's a utopian, you know, era. Like, mm-hmm. players want to play for the love of the game, their team, their athlete. Yeah. No, they're in it to make money. Christian McCaffrey in his last year touched the ball 700 times. Mm-hmm. Those are free carries.
Yes.
Free. You're not getting paid a dime. And why is it in college football that if you play only football, you can't make money off it? Mm-hmm. So what's wrong with a guy saying, you know what, I'm done giving away free carries, I'm making money now?
Okay, so I understand that people are in to make money, but what about the guys that are just in it because of love of the game? What about that?
Everybody's
and
different.
Prospects, Mike. My problem is that I have no problem, guys, because, and even Christian McCaffrey was dealing with a hip problem that year. It's just that he kept it low key. I don't know the severity of it. It could have been to a point that he was bodying through it every single game.
Well, Bryce, as you can see, Stanford running backs are tough, man. Bryce Love was playing on a sprained ankle and rushed for 100 yards in a Pac-12 game.
You gotta love it. But my problem is, like, now you go into Bleacher Report and it literally says which players should sit out.
I read that this morning.
That is ridiculous.
I don't think they should do that.
It's not the problem of guys sitting out. It's like where it's evolving to.
It's a trend.
Like, it started from two guys that are sitting out that are really good athletes that still got picked top 10, which ironically the three guys I got picked before Leonard Fournette all played in their bowl games, and they're all bad bowl games, but they all decided to play, and their stocks went up because of it.
Those guys need
running backs. But I understand that. It's still a draft pick, but that's still, like, you know, it's something to look at, like, at the end of the day. But my problem is now that guys are going to be fully healthy, and they're going to think, oh, well, Christian sat out, Leonard sat out, they still got top 10 picks, why am I playing?
Yeah, well, the NFL is promoting it, though.
But they're not promoting it, but they're not taking away from it. They're still saying, like, they're not saying, you know, like, don't play because we want you. They're saying, I understand why he didn't play, because at the end of the day, we're still
going
to pick him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, these top prospects, like, if you know you're, like, Leonard Fournette or Chris McCaffrey are going in the first round, that's a value. That's a monetary value you can, like, you know, find, and, you know what you're getting in. But if you're, like, a borderline third-round pick, what are you doing sitting out a bowl game?
So I have a question for you. Like, if Leonard Fournette was fully healthy, would you still want him to play that game, or do you still want him to sit that game up?
He's nothing to gain from playing. Okay, what does LSU have to gain from playing in the Citrus Bowl? Another trophy? That doesn't mean anything?
It doesn't mean nothing to who?
Them.
That's what I'm asking. It doesn't mean nothing to who? It doesn't mean nothing to the guys that are finally getting... Yo, kids sit down, watch TV, and dream to be in bowl games. That's not the best bowl game, but kids literally sit down and dream to be in bowl games. So we're going to tell you that this guy that's been grinding till he's 23, 24 years old, and the person that's blocking for him every single day, and he's going to say, oh, I don't want to play, and you're kind of like... Come on.
But if the player supported that.
Yeah, if the player supported, I understand that. And that's what I get. But I feel like the player supporting it more, not only because they understood the money he was going to make and how much he grinds to get to the place, but also because they understand that he only played 7 games that season and he was dealing with an injury and he was still trying to
die on the field.
Of course. And at that point, I'm not going to be like, you're injured, but I still want you to play.
I agree with you in the sense that if you're in a college football player for near six, you do not sit out those bowl games. If your team is fighting for a national title, you're bailing on that team right now. When a coach is leaving before the bowl game, if he's in a college football playoff, like when Lane Kiffin, you know, they fired him, but still, that's a big change in 1 week when you're preparing for a national title. I think if you're in the playoff, you should absolutely play those games. But if you're in a no-name bowl, those are money grabs. The only people making money is not the players. It's coaches and schools.
I understand, like, it's definitely a money. I understand, like, I'm not arguing anywhere you're coming from. I understand where you're coming from. I agree with that. It's just like, at what point do we get a choice? This game's important. I want to play it. This game's not important.
Everybody's situation really is different, though.
It is. Yeah. I agree. But, like, at the end of the day, it's football. It's something that sometimes it lasts forever, but it never ever does. You know, like, it's not something that lasts forever. These guys get limited games in it. So to say, oh, I don't care about this game. So then what? In the NFL, this guy's gonna say, oh, he's on a rookie contract. He has like 2 more games on the rookie contract. The team's doing bad.
You're getting paid, though.
I'm gonna sit out.
Paid in the NFL, regardless of those 2 games. You're still getting paid.
Okay.
Like, Nick Saban right now makes $11 million. You know how much college football players make? Zip. And they're doing all the work.
But they get scholarships.
Free education is not the same. It doesn't matter.
If you're getting fed, if you're getting the free facilities to work at, and you're getting somewhere to live, it's basically the same thing as getting paid. I understand they're not getting nowhere as much as they should because they bring in so much revenue. Probably get like 2%.
I saw how much revenue a report today. Texas players worth $600,000 and an Alabama player is worth $500,000. Those are the average players. Imagine Minka Fitzpatrick, he's worth at least $5 million to Bama.
And I agree to you. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I understand, like, how much they get isn't nothing compared to how much they're making, but at the same time, they're still getting something for being where they are. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're giving compensation in the ways that are legal within the NCAA, and I can't rewrite the rules of NCAA. Yeah. They're trying to give their players as much as they can offer from a school standpoint. So if the school and the team and everyone's trying to give you as much just to see you on the field, you're going to say, well, you know what? You're not giving me real money. So, you know, it doesn't matter. You can't really say that. You're playing for guys beside you. That's what football is. There's 11 guys because they're in the American. Exactly. So there's 11 guys that are on the field on offense, 11 guys on defense, 11 guys on special teams, and all that comes together to these guys being able to produce the way they do. So to say, yo, I'm not playing for you guys anymore, I understand these situations, they're supporting it, but when it's getting to a point that guys are just sitting out even though they're healthy, that's when the issues are going to start arising.
There's 3 guys right now that just announced are sitting out.
Okay.
Let me give you these names. Derwin James. You know what happened last year? He tore his meniscus. This year he comes back, All-American. He has nothing to gain from playing the Independence Bowl against Southern Miss. Next, Deshaun Elliott. Tied for 2nd in the nation with 6 picks. Nothing to gain from playing in Texas Bowl game. Connor Williams, sprained knee ligaments and torn meniscus earlier this season. Nothing to gain from playing in those bowl games.
The only person I agree with is Connor Williams, because Connor Williams has been playing on what is it? His PCL,
he has braces everywhere.
Yeah, he's messed up, and he's gonna still probably go top 10. He's a really
so good if Derwin James tears ACL and doesn't go top 5. Is it still worth it playing in the bowl game?
Derwin James got to where he was because of his work ethic. Yes or no?
Yes, that's facts.
Derwin James has a drive. Yes or no?
Facts.
So if he ends up sliding from first round pick to a fourth round pick.
Oh, whoa, that's money though. Whoa.
It's money. Yes, it's money right now. But if he still has that work ethic and drive, he will make that money back. And that is a guarantee.
You're not getting that money back. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
He will make that money back if he's ready to work as hard as he does. Of course, he's not going to make it straight away, but there's a reason he got to where he got to. Like, who were we talking about? We were talking about Jalen Smith before. Yeah. Jalen Smith is still going to make his money back.
He's not making $18 million back.
Not yet, but
he's never making that
money. He's never going to make $18
million? $18 million?
A kid that has 71 combined tackles as a, second-year player? Okay. He's never going to make $18 million?
Whatever his next contract is, you have to add $18 million on to get that $18 million back, which no NFL team
will money. But, yo, for all you know, he could have played in his first game in the NFL. He could have blown his knee, and next thing you know, he's not making
any more contracts.
Okay, but now he's working hard to get where he needs to get to get paid. And he will. Like, I can't guarantee that he's going to get paid. Like, we couldn't guarantee that he was going to get picked when he was supposed to, quote-unquote, supposed to. Because we don't know. Anything can happen. Some guys are supposed to get picked fifth, and they can end up going to a third round. Like, it's crazy. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the... So to say that, first of all, that the money is guaranteed, I get it. It gives you a higher likelihood if you don't get injured. Yeah. But the reason these guys got to where they are is because they've gone through injuries, whether it was elementary school, high school, college. They've gone through injuries. These guys could have got injured in their first year of university and stopped playing football, and then these $18 million wouldn't even appear.
Yes, yeah, but they stay healthy throughout the season, so now they're taking
They stay healthy. Decisions. Every time you touch the field, there's a chance that you can get injured.
Yeah.
True or false? So just say he does get this $18 million. Then he blows out his knee his first game in the NFL career.
He's getting that guaranteed money. If Christian McCaffrey blows the knee in the bowl game, you know what she's getting? Zip.
It's fair, but Christian McCaffrey will still get drafted.
Yeah, true or false? Where he's supposed to get, though.
But he will still ball like he's balling right now in the NFL, and then sooner or later he will get paid. Maybe. True or false? Maybe?
If you're tearing ACL, you don't know how the guy's coming back.
It's true, but this is modern day football. This is modern. This isn't back in the 1980s when a person tears their ACL.
I can't say
this
is modern day football. It's going to be the same guy.
Okay, but I can't say that. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. There's too much this, is, ands, and buts. But if you're going to sit out of football just because of the if, and, buts, why are you sitting on the football field in the first place?
Okay, I'll add to your argument for a second. Zeke Elliott, you know, Cowboys running back, all pro, you know, this and that.
Zeke the freak.
Yep. He tweeted suspended. When Chris McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette decided to do their bowl games. I would do anything to put on the scarlet and gold one more time. You know what he did? He declared early for the draft. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because he wants to make money.
Yes, but he at least played out the full season. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay, so he played out. These guys, like, no one's against them.
That's a hypocritical argument.
No, it's not. Like, no one's against him. No one's against him saying, you should come back.
That was a dumb tweet.
Okay, I'm not. Like, it doesn't matter. First of all, his tweet is irrelevant in the situation. Second of all, he still played his ball. He still played his
full season. That's a college ball cliff. That's what I'm saying. You play in those games. If Ohio State was in, like, you know, the Poinsettia Bowl, the Hawaii Bowl, you think he'd be playing? Yes or no?
No.
Would he be playing?
Probably, but
no, he would not.
Like Miles Garrett. So Miles Garrett is in a nothing bowl, and he was already going to be a number one draft pick. And he still went out there and played. Why did he play?
Because he loves the game.
We're taking away from the game. Yo, that's why I said I'm not mad at Leonard or Christian because they had injuries that they were dealing with. But at the end of the day, there's a love of the game. Solomon Hill was still out there. Mitch was still out there throwing the ball. It's a love of the game. Solomon Hill got the game-saving sack, and his draft went up. Okay, it's the love of the game. So why are we taking if a man is injured, that's okay. But if you're just going to sit out because you think you're going to make millions, come on now.
Okay, let me.
Why did you take away from the hard work that your team has been putting you through the whole season? That your team has been grinding through the whole season. Come on now. Now you're just making a. People say it shouldn't be called a selfish decision, but it is a selfish decision because you're looking.
They have to think about themselves, though.
Of course, and I'm not against someone thinking about themselves, but on football, there's more than just you.
Obviously,
on the football field, you don't just think about, oh, I'm gonna catch this ball because I want to be the. You think about, I have to catch this ball because the quarterback's throwing to me, the O-line's blocking for them. There's more. It's a system. It's a team game. If you're gonna go out there and play golf or tennis or boxing, and you want to sit out, do whatever you want because no one else cares.
But when
people are riding for you, there's 11 other people, 10 other people on the field waiting for you to make your play, blocking for you to make your play. That's something different.
Okay, Mike. Let me put it this way. You guys watched the college football playoff the last 2 years. You watched Deshaun Watson, you know, tear up Bama. He played in those bowl games, right? Mm-hmm. He was still the last quarterback taking the first round against guys that did not play in bowl games.
Okay.
Well, they did maybe minor bowl games, but still. Guys that don't have the same amount of pedigree and, you know, credibility that Deshaun Watson has.
Like you said, there's team needs, and with a quarterback, it's different.
So you're telling me Trubisky and Patrick Mahomes?
No, but I'm telling you, what did the team need? What did those teams need? Did those teams need his style? Where? What university was he coming from? What was their offensive tendency?
That's fair, that's fair.
What was their formations? What did they like to run?
But
what,
in a vacuum,
where did they like
was,
to throw?
Like, he was last quarterback.
You know football better than that. You can't just throw it out like that. You and me both know that. You can't just say this guy and this, because there's so much more that you look into when you're actually picking up, especially a quarterback, especially the guy that's supposed to be the man in the system. We picked up Patty Mahomes. Well, sorry, we. She's picked up Patty Mahomes. Yeah, she picked up Patty Mahomes because they didn't need a guy right now, so they need someone they can develop. It would be a waste having Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. So, what do you think of the argument when Jim Official went on ESPN this morning and said, "Oh, why if everybody criticized me for leaving early? Derwin James sitting out his bowl game. That's complete bogus. The coach should never do that to his players. If you want to hop on a plane, throw your Christmas so everybody can see that you're leaving, you want to take $75 million and throw shots back at your old program and say, you know what, they didn't give me this, they didn't give me that, and then you want to leave before the season. You know, he went to his team meeting, and he started crying, saying that, you know what, I'm sorry, guys, like, I didn't want you guys to find out on social media. Didn't even send his quarterback a text, the guy he recruited. And now you guys want to tell me that, you know, Christian McCaffrey, and these guys let their players know and coaches know beforehand. They're talking to their guys. If you went to Nick Saban, you know what you said, you know, I want to sit out the bowl game. And he said, you're not sitting out the bowl game. Do you think the guy's sitting out? Probably not.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just saying, maybe we rephrase it. Maybe the question that we're asking is maybe a little, we need to rephrase it. Mm-hmm. Should college football players sit out bowl games? Obviously, we've debated about that.
Yeah.
I think we're for a choice. Mm-hmm. Like, guys have a choice. Like, if a guy knows, you know, he's dealing with injury problems, he has injury history, I think he should sit out.
Exactly.
Maybe if some guys that are healthy, like Mike said, maybe they should play. But it depends. It all depends on somebody's choice. Mm-hmm. Everybody's family is different. Everybody's situation is
different.
It's all about
circumstances.
Yeah,
all about circumstances.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think we can.
This is 88.9 CJMQ FM. Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada.
Hello, everybody. If you're just joining us, this is The Huddle. I'm Zach Graveson. I'm joined with Ryan and Nate. Nate, glad to have you here.
Hey, great to be here.
I heard that final break is going to be pretty intense. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, well, we'll see how that goes.
All right, so we're talking NBA. Give me your biggest surprises this year so far.
Well, right now, the biggest team surprise for me would actually be the Detroit Pistons. Right now, the Detroit Pistons are sitting at about fourth in the Eastern Conference and seven best in the league. This is a pretty big jump for where they were last year. Last year, they stood at about 10th in the Eastern Conference, not making the playoffs there, and then 18th best in the league. So I think that right now, with the little additions that they've made, picking up players like Avery Bradley, and also just continuing to run with the guys that they have in Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson, that the team is starting to gel a lot more and starting to look like they're becoming more of a actual competitor in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with that, man. I mean, I was not expecting the Pistons to do what they're doing right now, but I don't think that's something that's going to last for them this year. I agree that right now, yes, they are surprising people, but they're on a three-game losing streak now. I mean, when you see them play teams like the top teams like the Cavs, they just can't keep up still. And yes, they do. They did put together a good team. Avery Bradley was a great addition, but they're not there yet. For me personally, I got to go with the 76ers as the most surprising team in the NBA for me right now, because it's starting to look like trusting the process has finally paid off. I mean, these guys are playing very good basketball right now. They're very entertaining to watch. They keep everybody interested, and they're just doing very good things. They're a very young team with guys who are performing at high levels for their age, and it's incredible. They have guys like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid who are essentially at the top of their positions at 21 years old. That's incredible. Embiid's averaging 23.1 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists, and Simmons is sitting very close to a triple-double average almost. He has 17.9 points per game, 9.4 rebounds, and 7 assists. I personally expected the Sixers to be good this year, but I thought they'd maybe squeeze into the playoffs as an 8 seed. But right now, they're sitting at 5th seed in the East with a 13-9 record, and I just think they're going to do very, very good things this year.
And see, what you said, there's one thing you said that sort of bothered me, the fact that you sort of already expected them. I think everyone sort of expected this out of the 76ers, and this is why I personally kept them out of my surprising teams. Trusting this process that they had developed, in theory itself, it sounds unbelievable. You suck for a couple of years, you get the best, you get the cream of the crop and the best players, and you make a future super team. And honestly, I think that this isn't anything that's not expected. That's like for me saying, if with the return of Markelle Fultz, whenever he does come back, are we going to be surprised that they get even better? I personally wouldn't be surprised. He was a first round pick for a reason.
I see what you're saying there, but my point is they're exceeding the expectations that were that people had for them. Like, yes, people did think they were going to be better, but did people really think they were going to be this good? A top five team in the East this year, when last year they were at the bottom, at the very bottom of the league?
Absolutely, I think so. Like, the only surprise to me with the 76ers is that they managed to stay healthy this far. That, I think, is the biggest surprise. There's nothing talent-wise that I find that would withhold them from even surpassing that fifth spot and eventually getting even closer and closer to that number 1-2 spot in the Eastern Conference. But again, back to the amount of talent and the type of talent that they're getting for tanking for about 5 years now, I'd expect to see this coming eventually, at least.
That's fair. I can see where you're coming from. How about we start talking about the most disappointing teams in the NBA this season?
Okay, wait. Let's do a little pause and then I'll bring
okay,
it.
Okay, awesome. Yeah.
All right, so if we would look at most disappointing teams, who would you guys have?
For me, I think that the most disappointing team in the NBA right now for me would have to go to the Memphis Grizzlies. I think that the Memphis Grizzlies were always one of those teams that were never the top of the Eastern Conference or the top of the league for that matter. They were always a very mediocre team that feeded on their ability to play defense and play sound technical basketball and win games that way, the hard-nosed way. But as of lately, they've looked completely opposite to me. I think that the Memphis Grizzlies look sloppy. They look unmotivated, and now they even look lost. A couple weeks ago, they fired their head coach, David Fizdale, for what people speculate for as issues with star player Marc Gasol. And I think that that was probably one of the worst mistakes that they could have done, especially at this point in the season. It's only the first quarter of the season. There's still a lot to go. And there was nothing that David Fizdale has done as a coach that, to me, would reach the severity of them firing him. This is something with Marc Gasol that has been speculated before, with former coaches stating to believe that Marc Gasol tried to quote-unquote get them fired as well. But if you look right now, the Memphis Grizzlies are sitting at 13th in the Western Conference, when usually they're 6th to 8th in the Western Conference. Right now, they're tied for 5th worst in the league, and they just snapped an 11-game losing streak. They've been losing as long as the Cavs have been on a winning streak. And that should be sort of inexcusable. I think David Fizdale was trying to develop a culture change and change the way that Memphis basketball is looked at, because they're not a big market team that gets a lot of publicity. But now the fact that he's gone, now you have to develop the team, but you have to change the mindset as well. And for that to happen the first quarter of the season is too much for them to handle.
Yeah, I mean, those are great points. And before I get to my choice, I just want to touch on a few things about Memphis as well. Like you said, they've only won one of their last 12 games, which is pitiful in this league. And personally, I think it's a big factor has to do with Mike Conley underperforming and getting injured. This year, he's averaging 3 less points than he was last year. He's averaging less rebounds. He's averaging less assists. And I mean, he's one of the only stars on that team. Is it fair for me to say that it's him and Marc Gasol?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So if you're one of the only star players on the team, you have a responsibility to perform that way. And not only is he considered a star on the team, but he's being paid like a star on the team. And if you're getting paid, his contract last year that they gave him was 5 years, $153 million. Do I think Conley deserved that contract? No. But if you're getting paid like a star, you have to start playing like a star.
And I see where you're going with that, but I disagree. I think more of the issue isn't the fact of Mike Conley's production. As we do know, he is on the injury list and hasn't played for a couple of weeks now. But I think another big factor, or one of the bigger factors that they had going into this year before any coaching issues, was the fact that they basically got rid of all the veterans on their team. If you look this year, they got rid of defensive veteran Tony Allen. Zach Randolph went elsewhere. Vince Carter went elsewhere, and they got rid of Matt Barnes. So if you're going to change the demographic of the team, then you need to know that the coach is the person that is expected to be relied on. That's the crutch that you have in order to take a young team and a young demographic and hold them up when times are getting, when times are hard. Granted, people like Marc Gasol and Mike Conley do have that role because they are now the veterans on the team, but that's a big culture shock to go from not having any to not having any player support and now not having any coach support now, and you have to start exactly from ground zero. So I think that's more of the issue that Memphis is having, and that's part of why they're looking even worse than they are now.
Those are very good points. I'm not going to disagree with you, Nate, there, but I will get to who I think is most disappointing this year. And I'm going with the Oklahoma City Thunder right now.
Really?
Okay.
I mean,
Big Three is not so big.
The Big Three is not so big. That's a great way of putting it. There was so much hype.
I was hyped up about it.
So I think we all were. Everybody was hyped over this Big Three formation in Oklahoma City. They brought in Paul George. They brought in Carmelo Anthony. And a lot of people thought they would instantly be dominating this year. Everybody had them as a consensus for a top three team in the tough Western Conference, right behind the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets, and that just has not been the case whatsoever this year. The Big Three has not been big at all. Like Zach said, they are the complete opposite. It looks exactly like they looked last year, just with new faces. Westbrook is still being asked to carry this team when he no longer should have to. Outside of the Big Three, the only other person that is performing is Steven Adams. And the reason I think that happened is because they decided to get rid of all their depth and get rid of all their bench players to try to acquire these stars, thinking it would work, and it's clearly not working right now. Offensively, these guys look like a mess, but the one thing I will give them credit for is they're playing great defense. They're playing great defense. Right now, they're first in steals, second in defensive rating, and that's what's sort of keeping them hanging around. Now, albeit this is most disappointing teams thus far, so I do believe that OKC can and will turn it around at some point, but they need to figure something out. They need to figure out a way for this Big Three to gel and start performing offensively. If I was the coach, personally, and this might not be a very popular opinion, but I would personally have Carmelo Anthony coming off the bench and trying to produce bench production, because he's just not fitting in with Paul George and Russell Westbrook in the starting five right now.
And I see what you see, and I completely agree that OKC is looking a little sluggish compared to the juggernaut that everyone expected them to be. But quite frankly, to be honest with you, I sort of saw this coming. I believe that there's not as much reason to be shocked by this, because if you look at last year's production numbers, Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony were all top 10 in isolation points. And the problem with OKC is that they brought a whole bunch of one type. The thing with the NBA nowadays is you have to be diverse. You have to be able to switch it up depending on who you're playing. Right now, what OKC did was they took a lot of star players. Granted, they are great scorers individually, but they all score in the exact same type of way. When you look at teams... like the Houston Rockets, yes, their primary scoring revolves around the 3-point, but when you have guys like Trevor Ariza and Capella working down low, you can lean on that when you need a change of gameplay, when you need something to lean back on when your initial plan doesn't work. And that is where the OKC Thunder basically had their downfall. You can't expect to bring one utility in order to beat teams that are now working on becoming more diverse and finding new ways to beat you week in and week out.
Oh yeah, just to touch on that iso ball point, that was a great point, because statistically they're ranked 24th in the league in assists. So obviously these guys are not moving the ball. And my issue with them right now is if you're going to play ISO ball and you're going to take your shots, then you better make your shots. Because right now they're 26th in field goal percentage and 27th in three-point shooting percentage. And that's frankly just not good enough to win you games. They're just they're a sub-500 team right now with a 10-win, 12-loss record, sitting at the ninth seed, not even in the playoff hunt right now. And I know it's a little early to talk about playoffs, but if I'm just saying they're out of the picture right now behind teams like New Orleans, Utah, who lost their best player last year, and Denver. This is just completely unacceptable, excuse me, for a team who has three players as prolific as Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony.
And I think to add on to your point with Steven Adams sort of being that guy who looks like he's carrying a lot of the load, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they got rid of Enes Kanter, and now he's the only one doing the production. So now he seems to be doing a lot more when realistically the same workload is there, but it's just one person doing it. And when it comes to the teams that that OKC has fell behind, if you look at teams like New Orleans, you have DeMarcus Cousins and you have Anthony Davis, two prolific men in the paint who would absolutely dominate someone like Steven Adams on his own. When you look at Denver, they have Jokic, who I would again take over Steven Adams, as he's more versatile and is able to do everything that Adams can do in the paint. So the thing with OKC is that really it's just a lot of the same thing, and it's easy to guess what they're going to come out with and how to play against it. Once you figure it out once, you're going to be good. So I personally think that OKC will sort of get better, but I don't expect them getting over anything but fifth in the West, if you ask me.
Behind who, if you don't mind me asking, other than Golden State and Houston?
I personally think, obviously, you have Golden State and Houston, but I think San Antonio would also be another team there. And honestly, I'd leave that fourth spot as a bit of a wild card.
All right, so before we keep going here, before we change subjects here, let me throw this in there. Disappointing teams. I know I don't want to make too much out of it, but for a team who only lost one game last year in the playoffs, Golden State, they're 19-6. Are they just bored with the regular season, or is something going wrong?
Golden State is in a different mind state, I would say, this year. They're just trying to act like tough guys for whatever reason it may be, and I think the fact that they're just not playing as smart as they used to. They're really just sort of looking for conflict. Like, you see Kevin Durant trying to pick fights with DeMarcus Cousins, getting ejected from games. There's no reason for a player of his caliber to be acting out in that way when he should let his playing do the talking for him. I just think that if they could just smarten up, go back to the team that we all know they are, then they're just going to be just fine and get back to where they were in the past years.
I personally think that even though they're going through these struggles for whatever reason, there's no need to be worried.
Yeah.
This is the best team. We know that they are definitely going to reach the finals. More people than not will that they're going to win the finals anyways. I think that it's
most,
a battle.
Most people would bet that. I would not.
I personally would. And I think that this is a matter of them losing the battle, but we all know that eventually they're going
to
win the war.
Yeah, I think at least favored to make it to the NBA Finals. I think we could all agree on that. They might just be, I don't know if they're bored or whatever, but I think we're all confident that they're going to pick it up and be who they are. Golden State is going to be Golden State come playoff.
We will see them back in the finals again this year. No doubt about that.
Against?
Of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's no doubt in my mind, Zach.
Well, stay tuned. Stay tuned.
This is CJMQ 88.9 FM.
Here we go. Time to give our five picks for the week. I have Mike here. Mike has the crown. He won last week.
Yep, yep.
So the way this works, every week we're going to have a new challenger to challenge the previous owner of the crown, the one who got the most picks right. So first game, Philadelphia at LA against the Rams. Mike, who you got?
This one, I'm going to go with Philadelphia. Not necessarily because I feel like they're going to win, but more because they have to win. Carson Wentz needs this for his MVP performance, and they just came off a tough loss.
I have the Rams. I think this is going to be a great quarterback matchup. Last year's number one against last year's number two. I think this is the week that people start taking Jared Goff seriously. The Rams' offense is insane, and it's not the same team we saw in Hard Knocks last year, people. I'm hoping this one goes down the wire. and I think LA gives Philly their second loss in a row. Next, we got Seattle at Jacksonville.
Well, this one, I'm going to go with Seattle. Seattle is the hot hand right now. Russell Wilson is playing like an MVP. He showed that last week. He's playing like Houdini. We're loving it. It's exciting. It's thrilling. I'm taking Seattle this one.
Okay, I'm going to have to go Jacksonville. Russell Wilson is the whole Seattle team right now. He's carrying that team on his back. I think he's going to give us a lot of exciting plays, scrambling away from Jacksonville's pass rush. But if it were in Seattle, it'd be different. But it's in Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville comes out on top in a lower scoring game.
Nice.
Next, Minnesota at Carolina.
Okay, so this is another one. I'm going with Minnesota simply because I feel like Minnesota's defense, they just held Atlanta's offense, a very strong offensively dominant team, to 9 points. And Carolina, their best receiver is Devin Funchess, that might not even play this week. They have Christian McCaffrey in the backfield. Minnesota's defense is designed really well, and they know how to stop key players. And offensively, they had a 14-point game last week, and they're trying to put up a lot more than that.
I have to agree with you on this one. Minnesota has the best defense in the league, but only thing that's interesting for me in this game is I think this is a great game for Cam Newton to showcase his talent against a great defense, but I've got Minnesota in this one.
I agree.
Next Sunday night game, Baltimore at Pittsburugh.
Oh, this one's rough for me because last week Lions played Baltimore and I said, why are we even talking about this game? And next thing you know, they put 40 points on them. Mm-hmm. So I still want to go with Steelers. Steelers are playing real dominant. Their defense, like, normally it's all about the Steelers' offense. Like, normally it's all about AB. You got Big Ben. You got Le'Veon. You got Juju growing up. You got Martavis Bryant. Juju suspended this game. And on defense, they have Shazier that's injured that's going to play a really big difference. But their defense is playing like a top 10 defense, top 5 defense if necessary. They're stopping teams. And I'm going to go back with the Steelers. I just don't believe that Baltimore has it in them to go 2 weeks to put up the numbers that they did last week.
Same here. I'm going with Pittsburgh. We're going to have a good divisional matchup. Baltimore has been getting hot. Pittsburgh did lose a big piece on defense with Ryan Shazier, but I really don't like Baltimore's offense. And Steelers, after last primetime game, they're fired up. They're physical. And I don't think Baltimore's offense can take it. And the Steelers' offense is ridiculous. So yeah. I think this one, the Steelers take this one at home. So finally, Monday night, New England at Miami.
I'm gonna have to go with New England this game.
Thank you, Mike.
Miami is struggling. They're just not. They have a lot of stuff that they need to focus on their team to kind of rebuild this year. Jay Cutler just isn't really that guy that he was kind of, I guess, expected to be this year. They're New England. They're just kind of put together. They know what they're doing. They know where they're headed. And yep, they take this one. I guess for this one, I have to say a score prediction. And I really don't think that Miami can hang with New England at all. I'm going to say 28-10, and that's New England lightening up and just running into fourth and third quarter.
All right. Well, obviously, I'm a Pats guy all the way. So I know the Patriots struggle in Miami. I know Gronk is out, but the Patriots are, since 2016, 9-0 without Gronk. So not a big issue. And come on now. Best coach, best quarterback. We're talking Jay Cutler against Tom Brady. It'll be over by the middle of the fourth quarter, 37-20 Patriots, and I'm being generous with Miami's offense here. So we have Nate Walker here for the final break on the show today, and we're talking about a topic that's been discussed for the past year and a half all over social media. Everybody has an opinion. Nate, the floor is yours.
Quarterback, NFL sensation, social activist, global conversation starter. These are labels used alongside others to describe the man known as Colin Kaepernick. But GQ Man of the Year and Muhammad Ali Legacy Award winner are newer titles recently added to his resume despite the controversy that comes with them. In 2016, the former 49ers quarterback evoked conversation that would change the face of sports. No, it didn't change the way players played or coaches game planned, but it changed the way we look at the pregame. Yeah. The part where players warm up and commentators talk about upcoming events and all are asked to stand and remove their hats while singers sing the national anthem. Kaepernick's choice to not stand for the national anthem in order to peacefully protest the wrongful police brutality against people of color has now created a conversation amongst civilians, athletes, celebrities, and even one U.S. president in particular. So much so that it stemmed into the topic of respect, or the lack of, by U.S. citizens towards their country. Protests during the national anthem against social justice issues have now widespread everywhere, from high schools, colleges, and other sports outside of just football. Though many may stand, or kneel for that matter, in support, many others are against Kaepernick's views and the methods of his expression, calling it unpatriotic and disrespectful to the flag and the military that fights for it. But I believe that's beyond the point intended. Uniformed men and women go abroad to fight for the lives of their fellow country folk, but where are the ones in uniform that are meant to protect and serve all citizens on home soil? Better yet, who are the ones being held accountable for the lives of the Eric Garners, Michael Brown Jr.'s, and Walter Scott's of the world? That's the point that's meant to be made. American politician and lawyer Jason Kanner once said, "Patriotism isn't about making everybody stand and salute the flag. Patriotism is about making this country where everybody wants to." Kaepernick changed his sitting to kneeling to purposely show more respect for military while using his First Amendment to still protest his cause. That shows a man who cares for more than his own. Kaepernick has been jobless since March 16th. Kaepernick has been jobless since March 2016 and is yet to be hired. Controversial to say the least. Multiple respected people within the NFL believe to think so. They believe to think that Kaepernick is being blackballed for his social views and his actions, such as Richard Sherman, Terrell Suggs, Joe Thomas, Michael Bennett, and even Kaepernick's former head coach, Chip Kelly. Now, tell me this. Kaepernick last year was 26th in completion percentage amongst starting quarterbacks. Kaepernick was 26th in completion percentage amongst starting quarterbacks in the league, above Brock Osweiler, Blake Bortles, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Cam Newton. But yet, they're still all in the NFL. He was 6th in interception percentage, only below Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Sam Bradford, Tom Brady, and Dak Prescott. He was 17th in quarterback rating. That sounds like a quarterback with tremendous potential, if you ask me. And needless do we forget that his O-line didn't give him much help either. Last year, the 49ers O-line gave up the third most sacks in the NFL. And according to NFL.com, the 49ers O-line was ranked 30th in 2016. And since entering the league in 2011, the 49ers O-line has never been higher than 24th, except for in 2012. All the quarterback names that I've mentioned above, only three of them have started in a Super Bowl, aside from Colin Kaepernick. If that's not enough, think about names such as Blaine Gabbert, Mitchell Trubisky, DeShone Kizer, Trevor Siemian, Brent Huntley, Tom Savage, Matt Moore, Geno Smith, Josh McCown, and Nathan Peterman. All of these quarterbacks now mentioned were not starters at the beginning of the 2017 season, but eventually started at one point in the 2017 season. Is it that teams think that these guys are much better than Kaepernick, where he can't be ranked top 20, top 30, or even top 64 quarterbacks for that matter? Now, public figures are no strangers to helping social issues, especially in sport. Look at J.J. Watt, for example, who raised multi-million dollars for Houston Texans suffering from the tragedies of Hurricane Harvey. But maybe Kaepernick earned his recognition and deserved to be more than just the GQ Man of the Year or Muhammad Ali Legacy Award winner. Because despite the criticism, he still kept fighting, donating $1 million out of his own pocket to organizations working in oppressed communities, while even being a physical presence in those communities as well. Or maybe it's even the fact that today in a social media era where things come and go and are forgotten so quickly, the topic that Colin Kaepernick brought up is still relevant a year and a half later. Kaepernick sacrificed his platform in order to offer further change out of his love for his people. That, to me, defines the true meaning of an American patriot. And on that note, my name is Nathan Walker, and this was The Huddle on CJMQ 88.9 The Cube. Have a good one.